Radio Hangar here. Pull up a seat. Let's talk flying. This is the Hangar, and I'm Taildragger. Tonight I want to tell you a story. One of those stories that every time I think about it, I just shake my head, because what these folks pulled off should have been impossible, and yet they did it anyway. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, gear, apparel, and gifts for people who live and breathe aviation. If you've got a pilot in your life, or you're that pilot, go check them out. Alright, let me set the scene for you. It's December of 1986, Edwards Air Force Base, out in the Mojave Desert. Cold morning, the kind of cold where the desert air bites right through your jacket and you can see your breath hanging in front of you like a little cloud. There's a crowd gathered along the edge of the runway. Not a huge crowd, not like an air show. These are the true believers. The ones who've been following this crazy dream for years. Sitting on that runway is the strangest looking airplane most of them have ever seen. It's called Voyager. And I mean, this thing looked like it was built in somebody's garage, which honestly, it basically was. Now here's where it gets interesting. The man behind it was Burt Rutan. If you don't know that name, well, pull up a chair, because Burt Rutan is one of the most brilliant aircraft designers who ever lived. He came out of Mojave, California, ran a little outfit called Rutan Aircraft Factory, later Scaled Composites, and the man did not think like other engineers. He thought sideways. He thought upside down. He looked at problems everybody else said were unsolvable, and he'd just grin and start sketching on a napkin. Burt had already made a name for himself with the Varese and the Long EZ, these little home-built canard pushers that were unlike anything flying at the time, efficient, beautiful in their own strange way. The kind of airplanes that made the old guard uncomfortable and the young dreamers lose sleep with excitement. But Voyager was something else entirely. The idea came from Burt's brother, Dick Rutan. Dick was an Air Force fighter pilot, Vietnam veteran, flew the F-100 Super Sabre in combat, tough as nails. The kind of guy who'd flown through AAA fire and come home to tell about it. And one day, over lunch at a little restaurant in Mojave, Dick and his partner Jana Yeager, who was herself a pilot and an absolute force of nature, they got to talking with Burt about the last great aviation record that hadn't been broken. Non-stop, unrefueled flight around the world. Think about that for a second. Around the entire planet. No stopping, no topping off the tanks. Just you, the airplane, and 25,000 miles of ocean and continent and weather. Burt grabbed a napkin. Right there at the table. And he started sketching. That napkin sketch became the Voyager. The design was radical. Twin booms. A long, slender center pod for the crew. Barely big enough for two people to lie down. The wingspan was 111 feet. That's wider than a Boeing 727, on an airplane that weighed about 2,300 pounds empty. The whole thing was built from carbon fiber and fiberglass and paper honeycomb. You could poke a hole in the skin with your finger if you pushed hard enough. It was that light. And it had to be that light. Because the fuel load was everything, Voyager carried over 7,000 pounds of fuel, more than three times its own empty weight. When they rolled it onto the runway fully loaded, the wings drooped so far down that the tips actually dragged on the ground. They had little skid plates called winglets, well, tip protectors really, that would scrape along the pavement and then break away once there was enough speed for the wings to flex back up. The construction took 5 years. 5 years in a hangar at Mojave Airport. Volunteers donated materials when they could get them. Dick and Gianna and a small crew working 7 days a week. Burt would come in with new ideas, new calculations. They argued, they sweated, they nearly went broke more than once. And everybody told them it couldn't be done. The aviation establishment basically laughed at them. The big aerospace companies said the airplane would break apart. Engineers said the fuel calculations didn't work. Weather experts said they'd never find a window long enough to circumnavigate the globe without hitting something that would tear those delicate wings right off. But here's the thing about people like the Rutans and Jana Yeager. They didn't listen to the people who said no, they listened to the physics, and the physics said it was possible, barely, with no margin for error. But possible. So, December 14, 1986, Edwards Air Force Base, runway 2, 15,000 feet of concrete stretching out into the desert. Dick Rutan is in the front seat. Jana Yeager is in the back, lying in what amounts to a sleeping bag in a space about the size of a phone booth laid on its side. Two Continental 0240 engines, one in the front, one in the back, puller and pusher configuration. The front engine would be shut down once they burned enough fuel and got light enough to cruise on one. They started the takeoff roll, and it was agonizing. That airplane was so heavy with fuel that it accelerated like a loaded freight truck. They used almost the entire runway, 14,200 feet. And on the takeoff roll, those wingtips dragging on the ground, they actually damaged both of them. The left tip broke and hung there, flapping, the right one tore partially away. There was a chase plane, a Beechcraft Duchess, I believe, with observers. They radioed Dick and told him about the damage, and there was this moment, this awful silent moment. They'd spent 5 years building this airplane, and on the first 60 seconds of the flight, it was already damaged. Dick Rutan made the call. They pressed on. Jana crawled forward enough to look out and assess what she could see. They decided the damage was to non-structural wingtip extensions, not the main spar. They could live with it, so they climbed out over the Pacific and turned west, into the unknown. 9 days. 9 days, 3 minutes, and 44 seconds they flew that airplane, non-stop, unrefueled around the world. Now let me tell you what those 9 days were like, because it wasn't some smooth cruise at altitude. It was a survival exercise. The cockpit was not pressurized. They flew between about 8,000 and 20,000 feet, depending on weather and terrain. The noise was constant. The vibration was relentless. They had a tiny autopilot, but it was unreliable, so one of them was always monitoring the airplane while the other tried to sleep in that coffin-sized space behind the seats. They ate military rations. They had limited water. Over Africa, they hit a massive storm system. Turbulence that threw that lightweight airplane around like a leaf. The autopilot kicked off, and Dick had to hand-fly through weather that would have been rough in a Boeing, let alone in an airplane made of fiberglass and paper. At one point, the airplane went into a spiral and they lost altitude fast before Dick recovered it. Over the Pacific on the home stretch, they ran into headwinds that weren't in the forecast. Every extra knot of headwind meant fuel they couldn't afford to burn. Bert and the ground team were running fuel calculations constantly, and the numbers kept getting tighter. There was a real possibility they were going to run dry before they made it back to Edwards. Jana monitored the fuel system obsessively. They switched tanks, managed the balance, squeezed every last bit of range out of that airplane. The margin at the end was almost nothing. When they landed, they had about 18 gallons of usable fuel left in the tanks. 18 gallons. Out of over 1,200 they started with December 23, 1986. They came back to Edwards, same runway they departed from 9 days earlier. The crowd this time was enormous, thousands of people, the world was watching. They landed, rolled out, and when that airplane stopped, Dick and Jana climbed out of that tiny cockpit, stiff, exhausted, dehydrated, and they'd done it. 26,358 miles, non-stop, unrefueled. A record that still stands today, by the way. Nobody has beaten it. President Reagan called them. They won the Collier Trophy, which is the highest honor in American aeronautics. Voyager now hangs in the National Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C., right alongside the Spirit of St. Louis and the Bell X-1. That's the company it keeps, and it belongs there. But you know what gets me about this story? It's not the record. It's not even the airplane, as remarkable as it was. It's the audacity. Bert Rutan sketched an airplane on a napkin that the entire aerospace industry said couldn't work. Dick Rutan and Jana Yeager climbed into it knowing that if anything went seriously wrong over the middle of the Pacific Ocean, there was no plan B, no alternate, no divert. You either made it or you didn't, and they were not backed by some giant corporation. There was no NASA budget, no military contract. This was a brother and his brother's partner and a small group of believers in a hangar in the desert, building something impossible out of carbon fiber and stubbornness. That, to me, is what aviation is about. At its core, it's always been about somebody looking at the sky and saying, "I think we can do that," and then doing it. Wilbur and Orville and their bicycle shop, Lindbergh with a single engine and a sandwich, and Bert and Dick and Jana with a napkin sketch and 9 days of raw courage. Bert went on to do even more incredible things, of course. Spaceship One, the first privately funded spacecraft, won the Ansari X Prize in 2004. But I think Voyager is the one that really captures who he was. A designer who believed that small teams with big ideas could change the world. And he proved it. So tonight, if you're sitting in your hangar looking at your airplane, maybe thinking about some flight you want to make that seems a little too far or a little too ambitious, remember Voyager? Remember that the margin between impossible and historic can be as thin as 18 gallons of Avgas. Now, this story tonight drew from several sources I want to credit. The Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum Archives, the book Voyager by Jana Yeager and Dick Rutan, published in 1987, the Experimental Aircraft Association's historical records, and reporting over the years from Air and Space magazine, as always. I want to remind you that Radio Hangar is an AI-generated broadcast, put together by pilots who care about these stories and want to make sure they keep getting told. You can find more at radiohangar.com. I'm Tail Dragger. That's the tale for tonight. Sometimes the greatest flights start with the simplest tools, a pencil, a napkin, and the nerve to try. Go fly something, Radio Hangar. Keep the blue side up.